Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 375, titled Take Two for the Fifth Column? Question mark. This is being recorded on August 25th of 2002. In connection with the discussion of the attacks on the United States on September 11th, I have opined in numerous broadcasts that one of the reasons why our intelligence services were not in a position to adequately anticipate the attacks, in addition to bureaucratic fumbling and incompetence, and there are incompetent elements within the intelligence community, but I believe that far more importantly, the intelligence functions of the United States were deliberately sabotaged by a fifth column, which is in effect fascist, but which involves structural relationships, in particular structural business relationships, within the context of which subversive elements have operated. Front and center in that fifth column is oil and the relationship between the United States and the oil-producing Arab countries, Saudi Arabia in particular, the connections between the Bush family and Saudi-linked oil interests are front and center in that consideration, and the late John O'Neill, who was in charge of the bin Laden investigation for the FBI, and who charged explicitly that it was because of American corporate connections to Saudi Arabia that the answers to the Saudi connection to Al-Qaeda were not readily forthcoming. Specifically, O'Neill charged in the book Forbidden Truth that his investigation into Al-Qaeda and bin Laden was deliberately frustrated by the American corporate connections to Saudi Arabia. And again, the Bush family are at the very core of those connections. In addition, I think that the U.S., Saudi, and U.S. Middle Eastern oil connections have in turn provided the context within which Islamo-fascist elements have been able to infiltrate and subvert U.S. political and intelligence connections. And in turn, I believe that elements of what I call the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground, with connections both to the Islamists and to some of the business interests in the United States that are central to the Bush family business empire, I believe that underground Reich elements have also been very active in perpetuating this fifth column. Now, in For the Record program number 322, number 326, and again in number 349, I dealt with the fact that John O'Neill, again in charge of the FBI's investigation into Al-Qaeda, a man who charged that the American corporate and oil connections to Saudi Arabia had been responsible for deliberately frustrating his investigation. John O'Neill had a briefcase stolen from him in Tampa, Florida, that contained details about every counterintelligence and counterterrorist operation in the greater New York City area, including manpower allocations and funding for these particular connections. I have speculated that the theft of those documents may very well have been as part of an attempt at frustrating O'Neill's investigation, and I have speculated that the fifth column that I believe was at work in connection with September 11th was involved with the theft of those documents from John O'Neill. It was maintained in an article that appeared in the New York Times and was reprinted in the San Francisco Chronicle of August 19th of 2001, that article authored by David Johnston. It was maintained that there was nothing suspicious about the theft of these documents. I remain unconvinced, and I think that the theft of those documents detailing all of the relevant information about every counterintelligence and counterterrorist operation in the New York City area, I believe that the theft of those documents may very well have been connected to 9/11, and to the investigation into bin Laden and connections to the Saudi elite, and beyond that to the Bush administration. There has been a recent theft of two laptop computers in Tampa, Florida, which was where O'Neill had his documents stolen, that is at the very least disquieting, if not suspicious. The San Jose Mercury News of Thursday, August 8th of 2002, carried an AP story, Dateline Tampa, Florida, and headlined, Two Military Laptops Missing. And the question that I'm asking in connection with the theft of these laptops and with other missing computers that have disappeared from the U.S. government inventory, the question that I'm asking is, and this is interrogatory, is the fifth column at work again? Is this basically take two for the fifth column? Again, Mercury, August 8th, 2002, has the following AP story. Two military laptops missing, and it reads in part as follows. Two laptop computers are missing from the military command center coordinating the war in Afghanistan, including one with classified information, officials said Wednesday. The Air Force Office of Special Investigations is investigating the computer's possible theft from U.S. Central Command, said Major Mike Richmond, a press officer. The computers disappeared last week. Central Command would not release further details, such as what information was stored on the computers and what office or person was responsible for them. Subsequent articles have maintained the official position that there was nothing alarming or suspicious and that no espionage was connected with the theft of these computers. It remains to be seen how accurate that claim is. Skipping down in this article, there is mention of still more missing computers and also weapons that have disappeared from government inventories. The departments implicated here are the Justice Department, the FBI, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and we're going to get to the disappearance of Customs Department of computers as well. Skipping down in this Mercury article of 8-8-2002, earlier this week, a government audit was released that showed that the Justice Department lost 400 computers last year. Most belonged to the FBI and the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and many had classified information. The agency said poor tracking of equipment was likely to blame, not theft. Well, again, in For the Record 349, I devoted the discussion to my opinion that in addition to incompetence or bureaucratic inertia, that the FBI, among other government departments, has been deliberately destabilized, and I believe that the destabilization of the FBI, as perhaps exemplified with the frustration of the late John O'Neill's investigation, was due in part to the activities of this fifth column. I would submit in this context that neo-fascist and neo-Nazi elements connected, like their Islamist counterparts to the Underground Reich, may very well have been involved with some of the infiltration of and subversion of U.S. government agencies. I would note that the Internal Revenue Service is also missing some computers. I'm not going to be focusing on that in a significant way in this broadcast, but I want to mention that in passing. Now, in addition to the military laptops that went missing in Tampa, Florida, from the U.S. Central Command, and that was the same city in which John O'Neill's briefcase was stolen, that briefcase detailing every counterintelligence and counterterrorist operation in the New York City area. That took place in the summer of 2000. I want to note that the U.S. Customs Department has also been having some inventory problems as well. The following article is from the Washington Post of August 9th of 2002, the day after that particular article appeared. This article is by Dan Egan, or Egan, E-double-G-E-N, of the Washington Post. It's headlined, Customs Equipment Missing, subheaded Report. Agency can't find many computers and credentials. And considering, again, my working hypothesis about a fifth column, the following article is very disturbing as well. Thousands of U.S. Customs Service computers and employee credentials were reported lost or stolen over a three-year period, worrying officials who noted that customs personnel commonly have access to some of the most sensitive areas of airports, harbors, and other transportation centers. The report by the Treasury Department's Inspector General found that customs could not account for 2,251 computers and nearly 1,200 credentials between October of 1998 and September of 2001. Many of the computers could have contained information that was classified or related to law enforcement investigations, while the badges could be used for someone to pose as a customs officer or gain access to prohibited areas, according to the report and security experts. Quote, it is totally inexcusable that they cannot account for every single badge and every single credential, unquote, said Douglas R. Laird, a former Secret Service agent who works as a security consultant. Quote, it shows that the system lacks integrity, unquote. And I would add this may very well be indications that there will indeed be a take two for the fifth column. Skipping down in this Washington Post article, we read, the findings released yesterday were similar to a report earlier this week on the FBI and the INS both of which had lost track of hundreds of guns and laptop computers in recent years. Senator Charles E. Grassley, Republican of Iowa, who was a member of the Judiciary and Finance Committees and who requested the customs audit, said the lapses outlined in the report, quote, pose serious threats to national security and public safety. Again, quoting from Senator Grassley, it's ironic and alarming that a federal agency charged with accounting for goods coming into our country has so much trouble keeping track of its own sensitive property, unquote. Grassley said in a statement, again quoting, if the Customs Service can't keep track of something as simple as employee badges, then how is it going to meet its more complicated responsibilities, unquote. The report was initially classified as law enforcement sensitive, unquote, by customs officials, a designation that shielded it from public view. A redacted version of the report was provided to Grassley yesterday, shortly after he sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Paul H. O'Neill demanding its release. And I would note in this regard that a close Bush business associate who overlaps the milieu of al-Qaeda and al-Taqwa, Talat Otman, interceded on behalf of some interests who had been raided on March 20th in connection with terrorism, and that he interceded directly with Treasury Secretary O'Neill. I would also note that the Sullivan and Cromwell law firm, which represents Saudi bin Laden Group and which has its historical tributaries running back to the funding of the Third Reich and the Bush family's participation in that, the Sullivan and Cromwell / Dulles law firm was involved in helping to weaken the Treasury Department's new regulations against money laundering, and those anti-money laundering regulations specifically aimed at interdicting the funding for terrorist organizations. I believe that in the actions of people like Talat Otman and institutions like Sullivan and Cromwell, we can see the more prestigious and visible above-ground elements of what in effect amount to this fifth column. In that context, I think we should also take note of the fact that there have been some disturbing thefts of not only flight attendant identification credentials and uniforms, but also similar materials belonging to airline maintenance personnel. And in the article I'm about to read, it has been noted that these thefts are very disturbing, that a number of airline employees report having been in effect stalked and surveilled by Middle Eastern-looking males, and that there is concern that the thefts of these materials could also be used for terrorist purposes against American air carriers. The following article is a Washington Post story by Greg Schneider. It's Dateline Washington. It appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Saturday, August 10th of the year 2002. It's headlined, Airlines Warned of Stolen Uniforms. The article reads in part as follows, and again, consider this material in the context of the missing government computers missing from Justice, INS, Customs, IRS, and also from the U.S. Military Central Command in Tampa, Florida, which was where John O'Neill had his briefcase stolen in the summer of 2000, that briefcase detailing every counterterrorist and counterintelligence operation in the New York City area. Airlines Warned of Stolen Uniforms from the Chronicle of 8/10/2002 reads in part as follows. The Transportation Security Administration has warned airlines to be on the lookout for imposters wearing stolen uniforms trying to gain access to planes or airports, citing a series of recent thefts from flight crews. Agency officials would not comment on the confidential warning, which was issued July 22nd, a week after burglars took airline uniforms, keys, and identification tags from the New York apartment of two Delta Airlines flight attendants. The warning does not cite any particular case, saying only that, quote, TSA continues to receive reports about such thefts. It adds that, quote, recent reporting also suggests a possible trend in the thefts of uniforms, vehicles, and other items used by police, firefighters, and emergency response personnel, unquote. The warning urges airport security officials to be vigilant about checking employee identification cards. Rumors about terrorists posing as law enforcement or rescue personnel abounded in the United States shortly after the September 11th attacks, and as recently as June, two Middle Eastern men were questioned by police after trying to buy a used ambulance in New Jersey. The threat is very real, said Captain Stephen Lucky, L-U-C-K-E-Y, head of security for the Airline Pilots Association, a union representing some 67,000 commercial pilots. Skipping down. Pilots and flight attendants have always been vulnerable to theft when traveling, Lucky said, but since September 11th, the items taken seem to have changed. Quote, they used to steal things like radios, maybe a computer. Now, they're focusing more on uniforms and accessories, unquote, Lucky said. And again, skipping down, in the incident last month in New York, two Delta flight attendants returned home after several days away to find that someone entered their Astoria, Queens apartment and stole airline uniforms, a key that opens storage compartments on board a plane, crew bag tags, flight attendant wings, a flight book, and a Delta ID card. The only other items reported stolen were $20 in cash and two cartons of cigarettes. In May, in Kansas City, Missouri, someone stole a delivery truck containing uniforms for mechanics and other flight line workers. The truck was later recovered, but the uniforms for employees of three airlines were gone. FBI counterterrorism agents were consulted on that case and the one in New York, but said they found no links to terrorism in either. FBI officials said they are keeping tabs on both situations, but are no longer participating in the investigations. Lucky said the pattern of such incidents cannot be dismissed. Quote, taken out of context, individually, I don't think that they're significant. But when you put them together, they paint a fairly good mosaic of threat, he said. Again, quoting, in light of the 9/11 attacks, I think this is an actual indication of something that requires a little more than casual attention. Unquote. In addition to theft, pilots and flight attendants say they increasingly feel they're being watched or even followed when traveling abroad. The Northwest Airlines unit of the Pilots Union issued a security alert to its members on July 2nd, warning that, quote, flight crews from other airlines have reported being the subjects of obvious surveillance by Mideastern-looking males and females, unquote, while traveling in Frankfurt, Amsterdam, and London. One American Airlines flight crew member who asked not to be identified said a co-worker was in a London pub during a layover when, quote, a Middle Eastern man started taking pictures, unquote, of her and other crew members. Again, quoting, there are lots of stories of stalking, and I don't know of these kinds of stories before 9/11, unquote, the American employee said. And again, I think these incidents speak fairly clearly in terms of a possible threat that they could constitute with not only flight attendant tags, books, and uniforms and ID being stolen, but also similar materials being taken from airline maintenance personnel, and with a number of airline employees reporting being surveilled by Middle Eastern-looking persons when traveling abroad. I think the possibility of Islamo-fascist elements looking to obtain airline identifications for the purposes of future terrorism is one that cannot be too lightly dismissed. And again, the point element for the fifth column I've been talking about is a very much above board and in the person of some of the petroleum industry connected elements. And again, Talat Atman, a member of Harkin Energy's board of directors, at the center of the discussion about the questionable deal that George Bush was involved in. Talat Atman represents the intersection of the ethnic outreach organization of the GOP, a traditional repository for residual Nazi and fascist elements from the Third Reich, Islamo-fascist elements connected to Al-Qaeda and Al-Taqwa, and the petroleum business. Talat Atman, the focal point of a number of different broadcasts, for the record 356, for the record 357. I come back to him in number 361, and in for the record number 368, among other broadcasts. In For the Record 356, 357, and 358, I talk about the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization and the fact that in addition to the residual Nazi and fascist elements that we've looked at in past broadcasts, it has in more recent years become a repository for Islamist elements as well, those connected not only to the powerful elements of the GOP, but to powerful elements in the Middle East, the petroleum business being a key element of unity in those two overlapping milieu. We're going to take a look at a paper which is in turn prepared from Stephen Emerson's presentation to the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Terrorism, Technology, and Government Information on February 24th of 1998. This document was posted on John Loftus's website. John Loftus himself, a former Justice Department investigator with a very high security clearance and a man who has done heroic work for more than two decades, not only tracking down Nazi war criminals present in our intelligence system and in the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, but more recently it was a lawsuit filed by John Loftus against Sami al-Arian that led to the March 20th Operation Green Quest Treasury Department raids that the aforementioned Talat Otman was interceding on the behalf of the targets of which Talat Otman was interceding. The following document can be seen at www.johnloftus_emerson_testimony.htm. Again, this is called The American Connections to Islamic Terror, and this is from a presentation by Stephen Emerson, the author of, among other titles, The American House of Saud, to the Senate Judiciary Committee Subcommittee on Terrorism, Technology, and Government Information, 2/24/98. Now, one of the focal points of the discussion in For the Record 358 about the Wahhabi lobby is the fact that two organizations that have emerged as spokespersons for the American Islamic community are in fact Islamo-fascist or extremist organizations. Those are the American Muslim Council and the Council on American Islamic Relations. And what is disturbing about this is they are not only not representative of Muslims around the world as a whole, they're not even representative of American Muslims. They are, in fact, Islamists, they are extremists, and have been advocates on behalf of terror-perpetrating elements in the past. And in terms of analyzing the fifth column and a possible take two by that fifth column, the CAIR and the American Muslim Council and their above-board efforts at silencing those who focus on Islamic extremists by tainting them as anti-Muslim racists or bigots, the CAIR and the AMC, both of them overlapping the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, they are front and center as part of the above ground of the fifth column. And again, this is from Stephen Emerson's presentation to Congress. The attacks on today's hearing and on myself by various Islamic and Arab advocacy groups illustrates the growing danger of allowing militant groups to masquerade uncritically under the banner of self-anointed civil rights, unquote, and human rights, unquote, status. These groups are no more deserving of civil rights status than the Ku Klux Klan's patently transparent efforts to masquerade under civil rights monikers advocating human rights, unquote, for whites. In particular, the Council on American Islamic Relations and American Muslim Council, as well as others, have sent out emails and internet alerts, quote, warning, unquote, their supporters about these hearings this morning. In effect, the message disseminated by these groups was that merely discussing the presence of Islamic radicals on American soil is to be construed as an attack on Islam itself. The same type of message was issued by Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, spiritual ringleader of the World Trade Center bombing-related conspiracy, when he claimed that his conviction was, quote, an attack on Islam, unquote. This type of contrived delusion is but a transparent effort to prevent a free discussion of the threat of militant Islamic fundamentalism in the United States. On Sunday night, an even more incendiary email alert was distributed by the Free Arab Voice when it labeled this hearing an attack on Islam, unquote. The threat to free speech and thought, if not confronted, the efforts by radical Islamic groups such as the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR, and the American Muslim Council, or AMC, to intimidate those who speak out on the threat of militant Islamic fundamentalism poses one of the greatest dangers to the freedoms in American society. In point of fact, elucidated later in this testimony, these groups are actual political wings of radical Islamic fundamentalist organizations. They have defended terrorist groups, terrorist leaders, including Hamas chieftain Musa Marzouk and World Trade Center bombing conspiracy ringleader Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, and the Sudanese terrorist regime currently engaged in a genocidal war against the Christian minority. Both of these groups have sponsored visits in the United States of leading international militants and known anti-Semites, including those who exhorted their followers to kill Jews, and consistently attacked American writers for exposing the threat of militant Islamic extremism. These groups pose a clear and present danger to American freedoms and society, not to mention moderate Muslims around the globe. And looking ahead to what I hope is not a harbinger of things to come, bear in mind that Michigan is one of the states that has among the most visible Muslim and largest Muslim populations in the United States. And bearing in mind attempts by CAIR and AMC to intimidate those who criticize Islamofascism as criticizing Islam itself. Following article, San Jose Mercury News, Sunday, August 4th of 2002, a Tamara Audi article from Knight Ridder, Dateline Detroit, mysterious radioactive shipment in U.S. Federal agents and teams of nuclear specialists are searching the Midwest for a mysterious shipment of radioactive material that was trucked across the Canadian border into Michigan in May, government officials say. Government inspectors did not become aware of the material until early June, about a week after it crossed the border. Skipping down. Investigators with the FBI and U.S. Customs have been tracking the vehicle that transported the shipment through customs records, federal officials said. Officials characterized the point of entry as a major crossing in the Detroit, Michigan area. So again, one wonders about this mysterious radioactive shipment. Is this a harbinger of a dirty bomb? Will the fifth column that I believe has been at work and that may be doing a take two, will they be utilizing this material? Time, I guess, will tell. I think it is important for everyone listening to this broadcast to do what they can to resist the efforts of this fifth column, and that involves the negation of organizations that would label criticism of Islamic extremism as a criticism of Islam itself. Within a week of the airing of this broadcast, there will be a detailed article-length description of For the Record number 375 in the For the Record section of the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, SPITFIRELIST.com. Spitfire has all of the past broadcasts that I've done available. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email them at mail@spitfirelist.com. And please note that the For the Record section of the Spitfire website also has links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, DaveEmory. There are older programs available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the Spitfire website and the previous WFMU website. That concludes For the Record program number 375, take two for the fifth column, being recorded on August 25th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.